Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about the books we write and the lives we lead and how these two are one in the same. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the Internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. Well, I am one happy camper today because my guest this afternoon is the one and only Richard Bach, whom I had the pleasure of interviewing, I think it was almost maybe a little over 2 years ago now, when he released Hypnotizing Maria. And we had a great conversation. And in many ways, my interview with Richard was kind of a dream interview for me because he was so interested in and spoke so eloquently about the spiritual and sort of metaphysical nature of creativity and of writing. And really, that spiritual and metaphysical quality of writing was what drew me actually to start Author Magazine and to start this show, and why I am so happy to have him on with me today. Richard, welcome to Author.
Bill, my goodness, what an introduction. I take full responsibility for all the good things that have happened to you since starting the magazine.
Well, I meant them all, but I don't want to put words into your mouth. Do you find writing to be a spiritual experience?
Absolutely. We each of us feel isolated, even if we live in the midst of a city or a mass sweeping of human beings across the land. We're still locked within ourselves, and there's a part of us that yearns. I wish I could touch the heart and soul of some other. I wish I could understand that there's somebody else like me in the world, that I belong to a family somewhere. Because the people around me right now sure don't seem like my family. They're not acting, they're not thinking, they're not talking like
right.
my family. So as we write, we throw out our little signal flare. We shoot this light up in the darkness, and we say, this is who I am. This is how I think and how I feel.
Right.
And then as that bursts into the night, and then drifts down toward grounds that we don't know. We have no idea where that light is going to be seen.
Yep.
Then we hear back now and then, either in other authors' writings or in readers who find us and say, my God, I felt I was alone in all the world.
Right.
And then I saw your flare burst in the night, and I said, oh, my goodness, I'm not the only one like me on this planet. And that, to me, is great joy, both to find what is within me, the star shell of who
yeah.
I am that I want to launch into the night, and to hear back from others who say, I'm the same way.
Yeah. It's beautifully put. I love the image of the sort of the rocket star. And I think that what's important to remember for writers, and I'd be curious to see if you agree with this, but what's important to remember for writers when they are studying their craft, quote-unquote, is that the purpose of that craft, in my opinion, is to make that star as clear as possible, to accurately represent, and accuracy is for me the key word, what it is you are feeling and wish to express, so that those people who are meant to be drawn to it can see it, so that it isn't fuzzy, so it is what you intended, so that they can see it and be drawn to it. Because if you waffle, if you try to make it if half one thing and half another, if you said to yourself, well, I want to write a book about flying, but I'd like to make it about a seagull, but no one would read a book about a seagull. I'll make it about a guy just flying. I can't, then they wouldn't have been drawn to it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I think it's very important for a writer to stop caring. Stop caring what other people are going to think, what we imagine other people are going to think, what a publisher's going to think, what a reader's going to think, what we're going to think. Just stop caring about it and let the force and the brilliance of whatever idea touches us to go clearly to the page. As soon as we try to imitate someone else, we're second rate. We're a second rate imitation of someone
yeah.
else. But nobody can match who we are when we discover who we are. And that's a long process.
Yeah.
And I thought when I started writing, I said, oh, what's my style going to be? I don't know about style, and I thought about this, and it drove me crazy for a while. Who am I?
Right.
And it's the answering, and that's the proper question for a writer to ask, because in the answer, as we go through living, as we go through writing, we see who we are. We see what matters to us. We see where our passion lies, and we see the way we spread those symbols on the surface of our of the paper or the computer screen, and it somehow, in time, we amalgamate everything that we've read and distill it, and all of a sudden it's coming out pure us. Once in a while I laugh when I sit down to write something, because immediately it sounds like Richard Bach.
Yeah. Nice to hear.
I've spent my whole life, this just the way that my syntax and sometimes my neologisms, queer little words that I'll make up.
Yeah.
And it sounds like me. I've just finished a book, and wow, it's another Richard Bach book. And I used to worry about that. How can I be different from somebody else?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Just find out who you are, and the difference will take care of itself.
Yeah, I always think that, you know, if you write authentically and you express your voice authentically, it is both wondrous, because finally you get to see that which you feel inside you out on the page, and yet it can be frightening, because if it's authentic, you'll have never seen it before, right? It'll have never been tested in the publishing waters. Whereas if there is this kind of thought, I think, that if we imitate, well, it worked for him, it could work for me. If it worked for her, it could work for me. So there is a sense of, this is new, anything could happen to it.
Maybe that's the mark of a writer finding herself or finding himself when we no longer are concerned about whether this is like someone else or not like someone else. It's like us. It's how we feel at this moment. And our job is to tear down the curtain that stands between us and a reader, as I see it, that to share as honestly as we can our humanity, our foolishness, the places where we've screwed up. That's really important for a writer to say, because a reader naturally tends to think, well, this person who's writing this book is just a highly advanced soul, way beyond wherever I can be.
Right.
As soon as we say, I tripped over my own shoelaces today, it helps tear down that curtain and allows us to communicate freely, heart to heart, with our reader.
Yeah. Very important, and I would be remiss not to share a story with you. A writer I interviewed was a local writer. We're from the Seattle area, named Bernadette Pager, and she's got her second novel coming out soon, mystery novel. I interviewed her for her debut novel, and she attributes her decision to go ahead and pursue novel writing in large part to you, because one day she was working in a bank. Yeah, on the San Juans, I think, and you came in, and she recognized you, and she, should I say anything? Oh, I'm going to, she said, Mr. Bach, I'm such a blah, 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 you know, this sort of thing. And you may or may not remember this, but she said, I guess she said how she had been thinking about writing, and you said to her, my dear, don't think, do, writers write. And she attributes that little exchange to the little push, that she needed to go do it.
That is because that's passing something along. I got that from my dear friend Ray Bradbury decades ago. And Ray Bradbury said, one of the things he said to all young writers was, don't think. and I put that at the top of my computer screen.
Yeah.
Stop thinking. Just let the story pour through you. Over the years, I've added to each side of it. My first precept to myself is have fun.
Right.
If I'm not having fun writing, how can a reader have fun?
Absolutely.
Have fun. And then Ray comes in and says, don't think. And then I add after that, don't care. Have fun. Don't think. And don't care. And by doing that, that for me, those are reminders for me that say, let go of all the outside world. you're walking into what you think is an internal world. And when you come out of it, dripping with your joy and your discovery, then you will find that when those words are published, when they go out into the world, you'll find that you haven't been nearly so alone as you think. You will find your family. And particularly now, in this day, this time, where we have the Internet, my family stretches around the world. The most used language from readers of my website is Russian. And now that we've got such great Google translators, it doesn't make any difference. Someone can write to you in Persian. I got a letter in Persian the other day. Lovely, lovely story, lovely letter. And it just underscores we have a family. We may not be growing up and under the same roof with our true family. They may be in Russia. They may be in the Philippines. They may be in Buenos Aires. But sure enough, they're there, and that the joy of being able to communicate first to our inner self, first to be clear, to have some idea, some story, some character, sing our song, and then to hear the echoes coming back nowadays from around the world, wow, what better calling is there?
It's a weird thing, Richard, when I wanted to be a writer, which I knew at a very young age I did, it was really impossible for me to imagine anyone wanting to be anything else. I mean, I knew that was silly, but it seemed like the best thing in the world. I thought, how could you ever not want to be a writer? But speaking of families, it's an excellent segue because your latest book, and it's a lovely little book called Thank Your Wicked Parents, Blessings from a Difficult Childhood. Now, I'll let you describe exactly what it is, but I want to preface this by saying I have long felt that the quickest way to get yourself killed is to tell a group of people they aren't victims who believe that they are. That will get you crucified faster than anything else.
I hope that's not the quickest way. To me, it is absolutely important that we take responsibility for our lives. I've seen that in my own life. When there were times when I thought, oh, the forces against me are just too great, I just felt myself sliding downhill. And as soon as I said, that is not true, I have the power to give or to withdraw my consent from anything. I don't have to breathe if I don't want to breathe.
That's right.
Furthermore,
yes, you have the choice to live or die, don't you?
Absolutely right. And if you have that choice, I had somebody write to me last month, they were going to commit suicide. The world was just no good at all. And they said, well, congratulations, you've reached the point where you no longer care what anybody thinks about what you do. Now you're free. You can go down, you can sign aboard as a crew on a cargo ship going around the world. You can get off in Uruguay and meet people that you never knew you're going to meet. You now no longer care. And this is a wonderful freedom for you. And as you do that, you realize you're not a victim. All of a sudden, you're taking control of the helm of your own ship, and you're going to steer it where you will. And as a writer, we have seas unexplored that we can go to. We can demonstrate, here are characters I've met who are going to show on paper, in their actions, in their adventures, they're going to show they may start out facing some glacier that's going to crush them like a pebble, and then find a way, demonstrate, show by their actions, by their choices and their actions, show I will not be crushed. Right. And as characters do that, so we say, maybe I can do that too.
That's right.
And that's a gift that we as writers can pass along, the gift of our characters' discoveries.
Yes, because, of course, as writers, it's an odd thing. A lot of when I interview first-time novelists, one of their most surprising discoveries is that people read their book. Is that, you know, there's so much focus on getting published, and then, lo and behold, these strangers read it. And not only do they read it, but they draw their own conclusions because, as you know, you start the book, but your reader really finishes it, don't they?
Exactly right. Once the book is out of your hands, it becomes a conversation with the reader.
Yes.
And yeah. you don't know what kind of whispers, what kind of conversations are happening all around the world because of what you've written. And that is your gift as a writer. You launch these little fire balloons into the air, and they go over the horizon, and you no longer know. Once in a while, you'll get a message in a bottle will come back to you and say, your book caught me at a critical time in my life, and it helped me. I smiled for the first time that I'd smiled in a month or whatever. Every writer's going to hear a different story. But those, we intend, as writers, we intend to touch the hearts and minds of others. And when it happens, most often we don't know. And once in a while, someone will write back and say, you changed my life. And all of a sudden, the writing we've been doing is worthwhile. We say, I have accomplished what I set out to do before I was born. I knew I was going to be a writer. I knew I had gifts to give from within me. All the time I was growing up, I said, what is the gift? I don't know what it is. What am I supposed to be doing on this planet?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, we find a way with our sense of humor, with our sense of discovery, our sense of adventure, we find a way to pass along that gift that we have within us. I am a human being. I struggle through the same struggles as so many human beings do. Here are my choices. Here's what utterly failed. Here's what worked beautifully.
Right. And I'm so glad you used the word gift, because I think that for writers, I think the best perspective they can have on their work is to view it as a gift that you're giving to somebody else. And if you were giving a gift to someone else, what is the most lovely, the most beautiful thing you could give them? Not trying to sell them, but give them. You will return, you know, money and so on, and all that will come in as a part of the return. But your focus, I think, is what is the finest thing you could share with another person? If you had only one thing to share, that's a trick I've used sometimes. I say to people, think of the one story if you had to tell before you died, what would it be? And they say, I know what it'd be. And that story that they believe, the one story they have left, is actually just the beginning, the first pearl on a strand of pearls that they have to follow. But what is the most valuable thing you have to share? Not gain from, but share, give.
Exactly right. And to me, I am touched when I read. I am inspired by choices that others have made in difficult times. And so I see that in my own writing, it's the same thing. I'm giving out my experiences that give me hope, that tell me this is not a chance wasted lifetime that we're living. The reason we're on the planet is not to ask the question, why am I on the planet? The reason we're here is to express life, to express love, to express our indomitable spirit. And we will be given chances. This world is really good at throwing obstacles in our way, giving us a chance to rise above. And that's some of the spirit behind Thank You, Wicked Parents.
I'm going to read
before we even know that we're here to overcome obstacles, we're thrown at them by some parents at a very early age.
Of course. And you know what's so funny about how people nurture their wounds and how they've been wronged and so on? Every book ever written, where would our protagonist be without these people, cheating them and lying to them, and there would be no story. And everything they learn.
We owe such a debt to our enemies, don't we?
We do. So here's a great one I found. I just opened the book, and so this book, for our readers who haven't found it yet, is a series of essentially one sentence thank yous to bad parents out there. Some of the parents who have made some poor decisions that I'm sure they would like to have back if they could, but they didn't. So here's one, for instance. It says, on one page, the picture of a lovely little girl, and it says, thank you for disowning me so that I could learn independence early. And this is what this book is about. Thank you for this thing you did so that I could learn X.
The book is, in essence, a series of prayers. And a prayer to me is not a request for some outside force to change our physical world. It's an affirmation that our spiritual world is already perfect in spite of what seems to be. And as we affirm that, some kind of magic happens, And whatever we hold in our thought, I think, comes true in our experience. And instead of saying, I am beaten down by this parent who physically beats me,
right.
What they are beating into me is the determination that I shall never treat any other human this way. They're giving me an example of how not to be.
Right.
They're giving me a forceful example, and I can be grateful for that. And it's hard to do, and at the time you're doing it through clenched teeth and you're cursing while you thank them. But long term, we look back, how many books are written by authors who have had extremely difficult experience, and what came out of it was the understanding, the power of the force that lifted them through that experience above it, to be able to give the gifts of what they learn to others who may be facing it or who may never face it, and say, I know that if I ever do, I have this resource that I learned from someone who went through that hell.
Yes.
In order that I don't have to be destroyed by it.
It's so beautiful. You know, my son, my youngest son, is on the autism spectrum and had all kinds of challenges growing up. And I was watching him work with this brilliant woman down in California this past week, and he's having all kinds of success now in terms of coming out. He has certain speech problems and social challenges, and he's learning things now at age 13 that many children would have learned at 5 and 6. And it's very easy to look at this and say, oh, how tragic that he had to wait to learn it now, and as opposed to learning it then. But I thought of, as I watched him learn these things, I thought, but don't we see that as he learns it at 13, he is learning it in a different way than someone who learns it at 5 and 6. He is more conscious of it. And so in that way, he will be a teacher for what he has learned, because what you learn late so often is what you know best. That which comes to you intuitively when you're just a tiny little thing, you've almost forgotten how you learned it. But in learning it at this time in his life, he's even that much more aware of it. And so, yes, it was challenging for him for those years, not knowing how to do the things the other kids knew how to do. But now he is conscious and will always remember the experience of getting over that. And that there's no way that can't be a gift for him if he chooses to see it as that.
Sure, yeah. I just read somewhere that Gustave Flaubert's parents were just terribly concerned. He didn't learn to read until he was 9.
Really?
They thought, oh, my God, what do we have on our hands? He's going to wind up in a gutter and all that kind of thing. And no, we choose our own way, and we choose our own pedestals, and sometimes we have to climb up difficult paths to get to those pedestals that we have chosen. We say, from here, I can communicate. From here, I can share what it's like to climb the path, what it's like to reach this altitude, and I've got higher places to go. And if we choose a lifetime in which we say, I'm going to end this lifetime at a higher place than I am now, then we're asking for an uphill road. And
right.
Sure enough, the metaphor carries very, very well. It's going to be difficult, but at the end of it, we're going to be higher than where we started. The view is going to be different. Our understanding of what we learned along the way is going to be different than if we just started with everything handed to us, no challenge, no nothing, all the money in the world, don't worry. Wow, I'm so glad that I wasn't given those supposed advantages and privileges and the struggle to learn what I've learned.
But even if you were given all those things, that would be a challenge in and of itself, because now you've got to say, okay, how do I know what's mine? Now you would have to learn to discover, even if you had all that, if you were born with all this wealth and privilege, how do you learn to discover what is truly yours and not feel like a failure for being born successful, so to speak? You know, no matter where you go, you're going to have to face it.
I wish now I was born in wealth and privilege.
Okay. Oh, well.
I want to write that.
I do think this, and I think this is important, because you were talking, I can't remember what you'd said earlier, but it sparked this thought in me, which is something I've lived from, which is that life, sometimes science gets it confused and forgets this, that life is lived towards, not away from. We don't live away from death. We live towards life. And it's a subtle difference, but it's the creative difference. away from death is fear, towards life is love.
Oh, yeah, beautiful. Well said. Bill, you ought to write that.
Oh, I have. Trust me. Many times.
That talk about a gift. Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely thought.
Towards life. Towards, and create, because creativity is towards, isn't it? It's the feeling of towards. It's the feeling of, what do I want? You know, life, oh, God, you don't wake up not to die. Oh, it drives me mad sometimes listening. People talk about life as like, let me make it to 80 and then, oh, I'm safe. Whew, I won.
Yeah.
You know? God, help me.
No,
there is
this magnetism that draws us as writers. That said, that there is something that, as far as I know, no one else has ever said in this way. No one's thought of a character like this before, and all of a sudden we become very close. We've got friends with that character. Who are you? Talk to me. And we have these dialogues with these creatures that come from within us to help us discover what it is that we need to give and who we are on this planet.
Yeah, who we are. It's a beautiful, you know, there's that great quote by T.S. Eliot, and I don't know it exactly, but I think it's from Journey of the Magi, where he says, we will journey a great distance to return where we began.
Yeah.
And not that it's circular, but that we are rediscovering in our lives journey the spirit that was there absolutely perfect from moment one.
Yes.
You know, that got obscured in the dream of life. I remember Hypnotizing Maria was beautiful for the metaphor of the hypnotist of life as suggestion accepted. Was that what it was?
Yes.
I thought it was a beautiful metaphor for that.
Sure. We see it all around us, suggestions coming to us, positive ones, negative ones, and we're at the center, and we're the ones who choose. I accept this rejection, this suggestion. I reject this one. And the pattern of those choices is the pattern of who we truly are, and we begin to express that when we say, I refuse to believe in this, and I choose to hitch my wagon to this particular star.
That's right. And yet it's all, but all of your, and I often think that like one of the brilliant things this practitioner who was working with my son said is that autism is not behavioral, it's perceptual. So in other words, all behaviors, all actions, whether you're talking about a child in the autism spectrum or a 47-year-old novelist or a writer like myself, all behaviors are an expression of a perception. They are, everything
wow.
is an expression of a belief, of a perception. And in this way, all of
beautifully
life
said.
Is ultimately perceptual.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Sure.
Isn't that great?
And that helps us know that it's, we're not subject to objective outside forces.
Right. Yes.
We are the chooser of,
yes.
of the path of what our truth is going to be. Whatever we accept as valid, that is our truth. So pay attention. What are we accepting as valid?
Right.
Reject that which we don't wish to see chained to our lives, and walk in the direction of the light that we find most magnetic for us.
Well, that is, I could not think of a better note on which to end this conversation. Richard, thank you so much. This was just a delight.
Bill, a pleasure. Thank you. I'm very, very happy to have a chance to talk with you again.
All right. Well, take it easy, Richard. And to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been just a great conversation. I always love talking to Richard Bach. And thank you all for logging in. Remember, do what you love. Write what you love. You really cannot possibly go wrong. What it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Now, next week, I'll be solo and taking your questions. So if you want to call in and talk about anything about the writing life, well, call in and we can talk about it. This will be our show. Until then, remember, just do what you love. Really can't go wrong that way.